Good morning. You're listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. I'm your host, Andrew Doman, politics reporter at the Las Vegas Sun. My co-host, the Las Vegas Sun's Tobin LePan, is taking the week off. Today we're talking to David DeMoor, a political science professor at UNLV, and later in the show we'll be talking to Brittany Markarian with a group called Southern Nevada Strong. They're doing some work trying to make the Las Vegas Valley a better place to live. All right, good morning, David.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so David, you're a political science professor at UNLV, and there's plenty of politics going on right now. At federal government level, we're talking about a government shutdown, defunding Obamacare, all this stuff going on. What do you make of it all?
It's been sort of, something that's been growing for about 10, 15 years, just this increased partisan polarization as there's just very little ground, common ground for the Democrats and Republicans. And when you have each party controlling one of the branches of government, it just seems that they just don't even want to get in the room together and talk anymore. So we don't get budgets anymore, and we get these votes that we've been seeing in the House over and over again trying to defund the ACA, knowing that they're going to go nowhere in the Senate or in the House here. And now it's almost that every sort of fiscal bridge we have to hurdle becomes almost a showdown here, trying to play the sort of brinksmanship. And it's just very, very frustrating for the average individual trying to sort of just wants their government to deliver and to sort of function. But it seems to have been taken over on both sides by the party bases seem to be calling the shots.
So a lot of gridlock, and I suppose that's nothing new in Washington, D.C.
Well, some of it's obviously by design, but it's just gotten much, much worse. Last spring, I was back east at an event at the Brookings Institution, and we were talking about sort of the state of policy implementation and where these policy ideas are coming from. And the guys at Brookings were quite candid, saying there's nothing going to happen in Washington, D.C. in any time soon. So if we're looking for innovation and you're looking for effective governance, it's going to be in the state and locals. And that's where they actually sort of see pushing their agenda. So Bruce's Katz books, the Metro Revolution, is sort of trying to rethink that paradigm to think about how can we get local governments and regional governance to solve some of these problems that the federal government is just simply not able to deal with.
Right. And in that book, of course, it does look more at really some kind of bottom-up solutions. Mm-hmm. And I guess, if we took that framework and applied it here, I guess you can see, at least at the county level, there's some stuff going on. They're actually voting on things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Controversial stuff, too. I mean, they just voted on this fuel indexing, which links the gas tax to the inflation rate. So it means taxes are going to go up.
The local component of it, yeah.
Right. And now they're considering this sales tax that might go up a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's been kind of controversial. There's been a lot of concern about Metro. Fuel taxing one was interesting because you had a pretty broad coalition supporting that. You obviously had the chamber pushing it in the legislature. You had Crescent Hardy really being the advocate for that bill, a Republican from Mesquite here. But you also have labor who's interested in jobs. Roads mean jobs. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the business community who's dependent upon the transportation and flow of goods both into Las Vegas and around the Las Vegas Valley. They realize what's going on here, and we've kind of realize that we can't depend on the state to build anything for us. It's slow, and the scale here is so big that the state just doesn't seem to be too interested in what's going on here. And we know this week the chamber folks went back to D.C. to sort of advocate for the Interstate 11 project between here and Phoenix, talking to the delegation on both sides of the aisle. In both parties there in both states. So you're starting again to see this idea that it's the local governments who are most affected by what's going on, and they're going to try to step up. We even see that in North Las Vegas, where you have the new mayor there really taking hold of the city government, and I think surprising a lot of people because most of our mayorships in the valley here are really weak mayorships. You have strong sort of government management folks doing most of the day-to-day governance here, but now you see Mayor Lee just sort of cleaning house, going to bring in
right.
some
I mean,
new
he,
people.
If you kind of equated this over to like a private business, if he's the CEO, he fired his CFO, his COO, his general counsel, and he's really cleaning house over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, absolutely. Now some of them obviously were left over from the Buck years, and that seemed to be pretty tense there. But at the same time, I think, somebody needs to shake it up, right? North Las Vegas has been sort of the laughingstock for quite a while here.
Right. We always talk about maybe they're going bankrupt. Maybe they'll, disappear
entirely.
They
can't go bankrupt. We don't allow them to go bankrupt. But yeah, absolutely. So I think, there's a leadership vacuum. That's one of the problems we have in Southern Nevada is because you have these different municipalities. You have the county governance here. You have the university. There's no sort of leader of Southern Nevada. You know, so that you have this sort of silo mentality almost, and you don't have people coming in and thinking regionally. It's more competition between Henderson and the county, or the county in Las Vegas, of who over the turf wars. And we even talk to legislators about that, and they'll say the same thing. So it makes it more difficult for us by the structure to sort of think united at a regional governance level here. But I think you're starting to see some sense of this with the Metro Chamber,
Las Vegas Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce, the Las Vegas Valley's biggest business umbrella organization. They're out in D.C. right now lobbying, among other things, this Interstate 11, this connector that connect Phoenix to Vegas, which you know is, you know, these are the two largest cities without an interstate connecting them. We have the chamber involved, members of Congress, the RTC here, and, and the county commission just approved that fuel tax. So are we at least seeing a bit of collaboration in that sense?
I think, yeah, there's more optimism. In Arizona, you know, they have the heavy lift. I mean, Arizona's got to put up 250 miles of that project.
All right, we got to do what?
12 or 13? 13, depending where it comes in. And the big part, of course, getting on Railroad Junction, and then around Boulder City into the new bridge into Arizona here. But, you know, this just goes to this issue sort of, you know, we've always sort of thought been isolated. We've always had this sort of economy that was somewhat impervious to outside forces here, but now you can gamble everywhere, right? And all of a sudden, the bill's coming due for not investing in infrastructure, not investing in education, not investing in K-12 or higher ed. And now there's this expectation here, oh, we got to raise our game. But when you haven't done the sort of groundwork here, it's really kind of tough to do.
Isn't there a case to be made, though, on the other end with these taxes here? I mean, the county's talking about a few of them. And later today, County Commissioner Steve Sisolak, he'll be over chatting about taxes. His talk is titled "Talking Taxes: A Few Cents Here and There." Pretty soon, you're talking about real money. That's the title of his talk. So it seems to give a pretty clear indication that he thinks that, you know, this fuel tax, sales tax increase, water rates going up, likely electric utility rates also going up. Is there a point at which people just get tired of paying more when their wages aren't going up?
I think your point's well taken, and so is the commissioner's point well taken here. And you know, this is sort of one of the things about Nevada. For a long time, we've been able to sort of shield ourselves from some of our tax burden, right? Through having the tourist economy here, you know, the paying a good chunk of the sales tax, as well as obviously the gaming revenue. That's a quarter of the state budget. Those two items, sales tax and gaming revenue, is half the state budget. So we have been shielded. We have relatively low property values. You don't have an income tax here. So people sort of have this mindset, well, we've been getting all this stuff already, but we know the gaming tax is coming down, and we've been sort of protected by the fact that a lot of this has been paid by the out-of-state people. And now then that's not going to – doesn't cut it anymore with the demand side.
Right. And there were some census numbers that came out earlier this week, too, looking at poverty rates. And those are sort of, you know, they're just as bad, if not worse, than they were before. And we know we've seen some wage stagnation
exactly.
here as well.
So. Yeah, I think it's about in the metros, cross-country, it's been flat, about 15% poverty rate here. And I think that's where Commissioner Sisolak, he says, well, you know, a lot of these taxes are regressive, right? They're going to hit the people at the bottom, a bigger chunk of their disposable income than the people at the top. So anytime you're talking about a sales tax or a tax that gets built in, an excise tax that builds into the price at the pump, and those types of things, those are a bigger chunk from the lower income in folks. And I think that was one of the reasons why he ended up voting against the fuel tax. And you can make the same argument for the more cops tax, right? It rolls into the sales tax. And that's going to, yeah, we'll pick up some tourists there, but you're also going to be hitting the people at the lower end as a higher share of their income.
Right, right. Like someone who makes $10,000 a year, they still buy gas, they still buy groceries,
yeah,
same as the guy who makes $100,000
exactly,
a year.
Exactly, exactly. So. And, you know, and as you've been writing about, you don't see the Democrats lining up to support the margins tax.
Well, yeah, that's another tax, too. That's that 2% tax on businesses that make more than $1 million
yeah.
in revenue a year with some deductions there, but that's certainly something that, well, everyone's going to have a say on that, right?
Exactly. It will be on the ballot here, but, you know, we hear consistently from the Democrats, right, more for education, more for infrastructure. They didn't do anything. And I understand why there wasn't any tax votes in the legislature, because they're not going to expose their people to tax votes if they don't have two-thirds, right? If the deal's not in place before, why do you want to go vote for a bunch of taxes that aren't going to go anywhere? But at the same time, you know, there's been a lot of talk here about redoing the tax code, flattening it out a little bit, trying to make it more stable. But all we seem to be doing is putting these sort of band-aids on these taxes and don't really get into the bigger discussion. And I suppose without the governor taking the lead on that, the legislators, they don't really have an incentive to do that.
So with this Marchand's tax, it's going to appear on the ballot as the education initiative.
And that's important.
And why is that important?
Because that's a framing issue. Right, and that is how people understand that ballot initiative here. And they were very intentional calling it the education initiative because that focus groups very, very well. Margins tax doesn't focus group too well, right?
Yeah.
So for the proponents, they're going to focus on the education side, right? Guaranteed stream for funding, even though it's not a guaranteed stream for funding because they can't guarantee that.
Why can't they? So this money, it's billed as this tax increase on businesses will help pay for better schools when our school system consistently underperforms, ranks poorly. By all means, could use some
funding
improvement.
Funding ELL and all those types of things. Yeah, right. Absolutely. But the way that the ballot initiatives are written, it can't have two parts to it. It can only be one thing. So you can raise the tax, and you can say it's going to go to the distributed school account, but that doesn't mean they can't take money in the distributed school account and put it somewhere else.
Okay.
So that's the problem with that. So they want to talk about a guaranteed funding for education. There's not necessarily that could be the case. For the opponents, right, they have to sort of get the emphasis off education and focus on jobs and the fact that this is a tax on business, which will then eventually probably trickle down to the consumer.
Right. So we're already seeing some of these political action committees forming. They're all based around this same idea. There's a committee to protect Nevada jobs, an alliance to protect Nevada jobs. It seems like these opponents are really saying, well, if you pass this tax on businesses, then we'll lose jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been some research, though? I mean, can we prove that?
That's one of those issues where you get a lot of think tanks doing that type of work. And of course, the think tanks generally are not neutral on that. Most of the economists will tell you, you need to invest to succeed, right? And most of them will tell you, you need to broaden your sales tax or broaden the base of your tax here. This doesn't necessarily do this in terms of getting the scope of economic activity. I mean, one of the things we know that came out in last session is so much of our economy here is service-based economy, and none of that's taxed here. So when you go to the nail salon or you get your hair cut, that's not taxed. But if you were to go buy your own nail polish or buy your own scissors to cut your hair, that is taxed, right? So we have a heavy service economy here, and none of that stuff's taxed. Now, I was kind of upset about, or sort of saddened, I guess, that when the interim committees that didn't get pushed or succeed was an analysis to look at what would happen or how could we implement a broader sales tax, lowering the amount, but expanding it to a broader swath of the economy.
So for a mom out there, for a student out there, someone who's saying, well, gee, I want to help our schools out, and at the same time, we have a pretty high unemployment rate.
Mm-hmm.
We know the economy is sort of just stumbling along here. So maybe the same person says, "Well, I also don't want to hurt the economy with this Marchand's tax." Is there a good way to kind of compare, or does it just come down to your gut feeling in the end?
I mean, unfortunately, it comes down to whoever's going to have the biggest microphone is my guess on this. And I think the teachers union are probably going to be outgunned a little bit on this. But they have their own. They're going to have their own campaign, their own argument for it. But it's going to be more difficult if all the elected officials sort of run away from this. And you're not going to be able to have that side of the aisle, say, promoting the tax a little bit. I mean, we saw that in the legislature last session, that they sort of ignored it, pretend like it wasn't even there.
All right. We have the elections coming up next year, so already some candidates talking about running.
Mm-hmm.
How big of an issue does this tax increase on the ballot become for all the candidates, whether that's Assembly, Senate, Congress?
It'll obligate them when we get a year from now. They're all going to have to at least talk about it. Right? So far, a lot of them are playing coy here. The Republicans are, of course, no, 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 but they don't really have an alternative.
Well, Michael Roberson, the Republican
senator,
an alternative, right? He said, well, tax mining.
Mm-hmm. And no one jumped on that, which is a little bit of a surprise for me. I mean, that's an easy, I mean, for him, he won the rhetorical battle with that and took that sort of issue away from the Democrats there, is that he was able to sort of get the credit for pushing SJR 15, which will be on the ballot as well.
Now what's that one?
SJR 15 is a constitutional amendment that would remove the language from the Constitution that limits the cap on the net proceeds of minerals, which is the mining tax. The other part of it also is presently about half of the money that gets collected by the net proceeds of mineral tax goes back to the counties instead of going to the general fund. So the counties from which it came, right, so the three mining counties, I just did this the other day for a paper I'm working on, the three biggest mining counties, they end up getting about $100 million back in 2012. Right, the whole state contribution of the net proceeds of mining is $120 million.
So this really isn't a partisan. This isn't Republicans or Democrats.
It's a regional issue.
It's whether you want the mining industry to have its tax rate in the Constitution.
Exactly. And if SDR 15 were to pass, it doesn't raise the taxes.
Does it? Do you think it'll pass?
I think it will. I think it'll pass the ballot, but I don't think that guarantees there'll be an increase in mining taxes, because you still would need 2/3 vote in the legislature to get that done.
All right, David, we're out of time. We got to shift over and give Brittany a call here from Southern Nevada Strong. So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
All right, and again, you're listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. I'm your host, Andrew Doman, politics reporter at the Las Vegas Sun. Now we'll be talking with Brittany Markarian, who's with Southern Nevada Strong. Welcome to the show, Brittany.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, Brittany, the Southern Nevada Strong, it's this regional planning group that's been around for a little while. But can you tell us, what kind of work are you guys doing in the Las Vegas Valley, and how did you get started?
Sure. Southern Nevada Strong, we're a federally funded regional planning effort under the Southern Nevada Regional Planning Coalition, or the SNRPC. So that means our partners include all the local municipalities, as well as many others, UNLV, RTC, CTSD. And basically, our region, through the SNRPC, competed nationally and was chosen to receive this funding through the Partnership for Sustainable Communities. And that's a collaborative program of HUD, DOT, and EPA working together to integrate housing, land use and economic development, workforce development, transportation, and basically try and empower local communities. So at the time the grant was awarded, Southern Nevada was one of only 29 regions across the country to have demonstrated both the need and the ability to be afforded this opportunity. So we received the grant, and we've got the next 3 years to basically do in-depth research that we've never had the funding to take a look at in that way before, a lot of community outreach, and then to take all of that research and input and come up with some strategies to hopefully build a foundation for long-term economic success by better integrating transportation, housing, and job opportunities throughout Southern Nevada.
So I guess I have a two-part question there, and just in terms of, you said Las Vegas had the need for this, so what is the need, and why is it important to integrate all of this together? What does that do for us?
Basically, Southern Nevada Strong and the Sustainable Communities Initiative overall is trying to just build strong communities, make us, you know, more well-positioned for the future, strong, resilient communities. And they've found that when you have different varieties of housing choices, good access to transportation, and a variety of different types of jobs, that it really lends itself to a stronger community. So we're basically just trying to better connect those three things to position our region as a whole to be stronger as far as our economy in the future, better positioning us.
And one of the things I know you guys are doing is reaching out to just anyone who lives in the Las Vegas Valley, doing some focus groups and being out at community events. What are you talking to people about, and why is it important for people to get involved?
Yes, community outreach is a huge part of the project. Basically, like I said, it's a three-year project, and year two is focused solely on outreach. And that is really important to us, because not only do we want to know what people that live here value, what they want to see preserved and enhanced, but we want to know you know, what kind of things are important to them? What do they want to see changed, and what can we work on? And so we've got several phases of outreach involved in the Southern Nevada Strong program. We kind of started our outreach earlier in the spring with phase one, just asking people those more general questions, what kind of things were important to them. We heard a lot of feedback on the things that they enjoy, the climate, access to entertainment, things of that nature, general affordability of the valley. And then two major things that came up across all the different types of methods that we were using. We did a phone survey. We had some, you know, we're at many events from anywhere from the 4th of July Jubilee in North Las Vegas down to the Boulder City Jamboree and events all in between, asking people about their thoughts on the valley. And two things that we heard over and over again that they were really concerned and would like to see improved were education and access to good jobs. So we took that feedback and moved into phase two of our outreach and kind of knew, you know, that our mission was on the right track, that, you know, education, housing, jobs, those are important things to Southern Nevadans. So in phase two, we kind of got a little bit more specific, and that's where we're at right now. And we have some draft priorities of what are the things we're going to be trying to address and focus on in this plan. And so we're going back out, hosting a lot of open houses all over the valley and asking people about these priorities. They can vote really easy on iPad surveys or online at our website, thumbs up, thumbs down on some of these drafted priorities. And then they can also take a look at a second section of that survey and see some areas in town that have been identified as places where we might be able to show some of this change that we're talking about and kind of demonstrate how we think we might be able to improve access to housing, transportation, and jobs.
Right, and I think you're talking about that survey there on southernnevadastrong.org. I'm looking at it now, and there are, I think, 12 of these what you call opportunity sites in the Las Vegas Valley where we could really see some opportunities for jobs, housing, transit. Can you tell me a little bit about where some of these are, what the projects are, and how you kind of made this list of 12 here sites throughout the valley?
Sure. Yeah, we call them opportunity sites. Basically, it's an opportunity to kind of demonstrate to people. We played around with different, you know, names for them. It didn't really matter, but demonstration sites are often called just places where we think they're ripe for reinvestment and could really show some positive change from the type of strategies that we're talking about, thinking about, and looking at. So these areas of town, it started with a lot of different ones. As we talked about before, the Southern Nevada Strong Project, we really are trying to involve everyone from day one so that everyone comes to the table, and this plan that we have at the end of the project is something that we've all weighed in on and can agree on and hopefully have strategies that can move us forward. And so there are a lot of people involved at the different levels of the project. And so we've involved the SNRPC members, elected officials, nonprofit leaders, business leaders, and they came up with about 40 different sites that they thought, you know, might be ripe for reinvestment where we could take a look at and see if we could impact some change there. And then we kind of looked at which ones, you know, based on jurisdiction and need and where they might be positioned well for change, and we're able to narrow that down to 12 opportunity sites that we're working with now in phase two of our outreach. And some of those sites, like Maryland Parkway Corridor by the school, Boulder Highway's been identified. We also have the Medical District, Buena Vista Springs in North Las Vegas, Gibson down in Henderson. So there's a wide variety of different areas where we think we might be able to give a good example or demonstration of the kind of change we're talking about. And now in this phase of our outreach, this is the second portion of our community outreach survey. And so we're asking people, you know, are there one or two, are there three opportunity sites that would be more important to you that you would like to see furthered in this process and kind of take a better look at? And so we're out there in the community talking to people to see which ones they think, you know, they'd like to see some time and energy spent on. So it'll be a coordinated effort between the different elected officials and people involved in the grant, as well as public input on which priority sites we're able to kind of move forward with and fully develop.
So let's say, let's pick one here, Maryland Parkway Corridor. Let's say a lot of people think it's important to have transit options there running up and down that corridor from downtown to UNLV. If that one is, for instance, number one, what does that actually translate into? I just want to be clear here with Southern Nevada Strong. It is a planning effort. So is there eventually some notion that this would enable us to get the money to actually implement the plan?
Yes, that's exactly right. It is a little bit confusing dealing with planning efforts because we are talking about kind of laying the groundwork for things to take place down the line, coming up with a good strategic plan. So that's exactly what we do. We would further three of these opportunity sites and do full site development, all the research and legwork to see what it would take, what kind of strategies we would suggest to better connect housing, transportation, and jobs in those areas. And then those will kind of be ready for actual implementation. When this grant is completed, it will also position us as a region. We will have a federally recognized regional plan, and so we'll be better positioned to go back and compete for the implementation funds to put some of these things that we've researched and come up with into place.
So the federal government would be the one with the dollars, grant dollars, maybe to give us some money here in the Las Vegas Valley to actually do this kind of stuff then?
We've received the planning grant, through the federal government, and we'd certainly be able to go back if that program, should that program still be alive and well, we'd be able to go back and compete for the implementation funds, which is the second just kind of tier in the Sustainable Communities Initiative.
Right. And Brittany, I know one of the things that Southern Nevada Strong has looked at is also just long-term growth patterns here in the Las Vegas Valley. Certainly growth has been, for the past few decades, a big deal here in the Las Vegas Valley, and it keeps just marching out and out and out. Is there some kind of effort going on with Southern Nevada Strong to maybe look at some denser development?
We have taken a look at that. There's been a lot of research. Like I said, year one was devoted primarily to research. So we've got a lot of analysis available on our website of projected densities if we just continue to grow, the way that we have been without a little bit more of a strategic approach. Then there's also mapping that's been done to show, if we were to put some of these strategies in place, building in areas that already have some infrastructure, sewer, water, things of those nature, and promoting the infill strategies, how we might be able to lessen the impact and the dollar spent.
Are you finding that people want that? Do they want to live in a denser environment, maybe in an apartment or condo style, rather than in a suburban home on the edge of the valley?
We're still kind of taking a look at that in phase two, but that is the trend. They're showing that, a young educated workforce choose where they want to live and then get a job now. So we're trying to build vibrant urban communities that they're attracted to. And so that's certainly something that we're taking a look at, making sure that we're providing the housing choices that people are looking for and the communities that people want to live and work in.
And now, Brittany, we're almost out of time here, but just so people can know a little bit more about Southern Nevada Strong and maybe participate in this community survey, where can they go to find out more?
They can go to southernnevadastrong.org, and we'd love for them to participate in the survey that we have going on right now. So the top right-hand corner of our website, southernnevadastrong.org. Go ahead and share that with your friends, and we'll always be looking for feedback at some point throughout this process.
All right. Thank you. We've been talking with Brittany Markarian from Southern Nevada Strong, and you've been listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. Our producer is Richard Riegel, and for the Las Vegas Sun, I'm your host, Andrew Doman. Tune in next week.